Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, April 21st, 2022. Burn ban in effect. No ground fires by order of Presidio County. Presidio Bridge expansion to move forward, says State Senator. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. State Senator Cesar Blanco, Presidio's representative in Austin, announced on Wednesday that there had been some movement in the prolonged battle to reinitiate stalled construction on the Presidio International Bridge. Governor Abbott has given the Texas Department of Transportation the green light to initiate a Memo of Understanding, MOU, so the construction can move forward, per Senator Blanco's office, with TxDOT expecting to restart construction this summer and wrap up by the end of the year. Construction on the American side of the bridge has been stalled for months, resulting in delays and headaches for travelers and customs officials alike. The Memo of Understanding, an agreement between the U.S., Texas, and Mexican officials, will allow the Texas Department of Transportation to carry out an expansion project on the U.S. side of the bridge, putting in an extra lane for both the northbound and southbound side. According to Senator Blanco's office, TxDOT is working on finalizing the MOU so it can be signed by officials. Presidio city officials were under the impression that an MOU had already been drafted and was simply waiting for Abbott's signature. Back in February, Port Director Jesus Luis Chavez attended a city council meeting to address public concerns about the state of the bridge, which currently funnels traffic into one lane for a few hundred yards on the Mexican side. In Chavez's year-long tenure, he's seen wait times to cross into the United States reach 10 hours or more on holiday weekends. "It's been the same song and dance," he said. "I have not received a response from the governor's office. We need to push forward as one voice, because if y'all don't, the bridge won't be done by Thanksgiving or Christmas." At that meeting, Presidio City Council moved to write a letter to the governor's office as a push to prioritize the Memo of Understanding. The Presidio Bridge is unique among international bridges in that it is owned by the Texas Department of Transportation. The state's other international bridges are all owned by private investors or the city or county they are located in. Mexican authorities had mostly completed their half of the bridge, and the missing piece was Abbott's approval. Things were quiet for a few months, though rumors swirled at a Presidio Municipal Development District, PMDD, meeting on April 15th that construction materials for the bridge were starting to pile up in town once again. Now, per Senator Blanco, Presidio can expect to see work on the bridge start back up in the coming months. The governor giving the go-ahead on the new agreement for the Presidio Bridge is huge news for our district, Senator Blanco said in a press release. Improvements to the bridge will improve the movement of both personal and commercial traffic, reduce congestion and bridge wait times, facilitate the continued free flow of commodities between the United States and Mexico, and improve pedestrian safety. TxDOT did not return a request for comment on the bridge construction by press time. Editor's note, an earlier version of this story, based on an earlier press release from Senator Blanco's office, ran in the April 21st, 2022 issue of the Presidio International, stating that the Memo of Understanding for the Presidio International Bridge had been signed by Governor Abbott. The Big Bend Sentinel received updated information from the senator's office before going to press. A correction will run in the upcoming issue of the Presidio International. We regret the error. Second COVID boosters available at some Tri-County locations. By Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBenSentinel.com. Tri-County. At the end of March, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized a second booster dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech or Moderna COVID-19 vaccines for those 50 years of age and older and for certain immunocompromised individuals. The second boosters are meant to protect those who are at higher risk for severe illness, hospitalization, and death, per the FDA. Tri-County residents who meet the eligibility requirements and received their first booster at least 4 months ago can get their second boosters at a variety of locations throughout the region, though hours and stipulations vary. The CDC has authorized mixing or matching when it comes to selecting boosters. The Big Bend Sentinel has compiled a non-exhaustive list below of places offering second boosters. For the time being, second booster shots are not available in Marfa, at either the Marfa Country Clinic or at the Preventative Care Health Services, PCHS, Marfa Clinic. Dr. Christy Alexander of the Marfa Country Clinic said they would like to start offering it in the future, though she isn't sure yet whether there are enough people interested in getting their second boosters at the moment. She has fielded inquiries from patients and refers them to locations in Alpine. In general, if they're 50 and older, and it's been 4 months or more, and they are at risk, if they're going to be traveling or in a part of our country where the case rates are high, then yeah, I'm saying go for it, she said. There have been no major problems shown with that second booster, so why not get it? Booster shots are free to receive, but some locations may ask for proof of insurance or a form of ID for reporting purposes. Preventative Care Health Services, PCHS, is offering second boosters only at its Family Health Services of Alpine location at 1605 Fort Davis Highway on Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., appointments only. Call ahead to make an appointment by dialing 432-837-4555. Prescriptions Shop Alpine has second booster shots available only on Fridays during regular business hours from 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Patients need to call ahead to book an appointment and should arrive early. Proof of vaccination card is required. Proof of insurance or some form of ID may be requested for reporting purposes. Call 432-837-3498 to learn more. Highland Drug in Alpine has second boosters available on most days, but the availability varies by week based on staffing. Those interested are encouraged to check the pharmacy's Facebook page, where vaccine schedules are posted each week, for the most up-to-date information. Proof of vaccination card is recommended but not required. Call 432-837-3931 to get available times. The Texas Department of State Health Services is offering Moderna and Pfizer booster shots in Alpine, Marfa, and Presidio during clinic hours. Patients should call ahead to make an appointment. To make an appointment at the Alpine Clinic, located at 205 North Cockrell Street, call 432-837-3877. To get the booster in Marfa, located at 205 East El Paso Street, call 432-729-5045. Presidio residents can get the booster at 701 Beaumar Avenue and can call 432-229-1540 to schedule an appointment. Marfa's fire station sees movement on long-awaited expansion project. by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa's volunteer fire department station, which has been slated for a much-needed expansion for a handful of years, may soon see the reality of a new and improved station, with the city recently approving the solicitation of requests for bids from contractors. "It's just crowded in here. It's crazy," said Fire Chief Gary Mitschke of the station's current cramped space, which is entirely maintained by volunteer firefighters. "It's just hard to function, hard to keep anything up." The proposed expansion will primarily involve building onto the back of the metal building where trucks, vehicles, and equipment are currently stored, allowing the department to double their weatherized storage space. The project also involves constructing a new ADA-accessible bathroom with a shower, laundry room, and kitchen. The overall design prioritizes simplicity and economic viability, said Councilmember Yosef Ben-Yehuda, who is also a member of the Volunteer Fire Department, in a recent City Council meeting. The additional space should allow for the relocation of lockers and improvement of training space, said Mitschke. The way he sees it, the expansion will be a gradual process. "Hopefully, it'll give us enough room to do everything we need to do," said Mitschke. "It'll be what it is, then we'll figure out how we're going to utilize it the most." Mud Lab, a local architecture firm run by Elizabeth Farrell and Zeke Rainey, donated their time to render architectural plans, which were also reviewed by a number of contractors. Rainey is a member of the Volunteer Fire Department. The fire department will essentially be taking up the remainder of their lot's available space in order to extend the metal structure, which was originally built in the 1970s and was designed to be expanded upon. "Fire engines and hoses sitting outside deteriorate at faster rates," said Mitschke, "due to sun exposure. Storing the emergency vehicles outdoors also poses problems in the winter when water has to be drained from fire engines to prevent valves from freezing. You can't really have fire engines ready to go when they're sitting outside during the winter," said Mitschke. The fire department also recently secured an easement from the appraisal district for a permanent fire lane, which will allow them to run a one-way system in and out of the facility with their emergency vehicles. The construction will be broken up into two phases. Phase one will focus on the construction of the insulated metal building, and phase two will focus on the additional facilities, like the bathroom, laundry room, and kitchen. The distinction was made in the event the department only has enough funds for phase one, said Councilmember Ben Yehuda. "There is around $175,000 currently budgeted for the project, $50,000 of which has been provided by Presidio County, and $122,000 from the city. The city owns the fire station and has budgeted for the expansion for a number of years." In an earlier budget-focused meeting this fall, Ben Yehuda advocated to increase the existing funds allocated from $82,500 to $122,000 for the firehouse revamp, with Mayor Manny Baeza urging the department to get moving on spending the money already budgeted. But the fire department has argued their reasoning for continually rolling over funds was necessary in order to beef up the project's budget to a feasible amount. "How do you start a project that you don't have enough money to pay for?" said Mitschke. "You can't start something like this and stop in the middle of it because you run out of money. You really need to have the funding available to do it." At a city council meeting last week, Ben Yehuda presented the plans for the expansion project and stated it was now up to the city to decide whether they wanted to proceed with the project or not. "This is the city's building. The city has allocated funds to it. You've got a group of 20 to 25 dedicated volunteers that runs this department that shows up weekly and for incidents to take care of the building, to take care of the equipment," said Ben Yehuda. We've gone through the process to try to bring a proposal. Council members and the mayor were excited to see the plans for the expansion and voted to approve putting out requests for bids, although some expressed concerns regarding their ability to attract the right contractor. Marfa's fire station is also designated as the go-to emergency operations center for Presidio County, meaning the building serves as an emergency management site for local officials in the case of a major incident. Mitch Key said the space last served as an EOC in 2011 during the Rock House fire. Mitch Key also serves as emergency management coordinator for Presidio County. The fire station's original 1938 Art Deco style pink-hued building is an iconic structure with a lot of history, said Mitch Key. Marfa's volunteer fire department can trace their roots back to the year 1910, said Mitch Key, who has researched the service. He said he wanted to hold on to the existing site and work on making it as functional as possible, as opposed to building from scratch. I don't want to give up the history of the old station here, said Mitch Key. The original station, which has been expanded on with additional structures, is complete with an upstairs living quarters where firefighters used to live and an old-fashioned fireman's pole. Mitch Key hopes to declutter the area, which is currently a miscellaneous storage space, and turn it into a mapping area. He said he'd also like to better display some of the old archival images and artifacts from the station. Mitch Key is currently operating with a crew of around 25 volunteer firefighters, he said. Their bylaws allow them to have up to 34 members. He said the expansion project will better support their crew and let them know their hard work is appreciated. Anybody who hasn't been in fire doesn't really understand how much work it really takes to do this and what everybody gives up to do this. We have pagers. We're on call 24/7. We don't get a day off, said Mitch Key. Photo by Cody Jornson. The Marfa Volunteer Fire Department recently received approval on their formal plans to expand their facilities from the city, who owns the building. The project now enters into the next phase of attracting a contractor in order to begin construction. Former Marfa and Valentine ISD teacher indicted by grand jury on child pornography charges as DPS investigates possible victims. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Pecos. A grand jury last week indicted Albert Ackley, a Valentine ISD teacher of 19 years who previously taught in Marfa, on one count of possession of child pornography and one count of distribution of child pornography. In addition to the existing child pornography charges, Ackley has confessed to having sexual contact with children in the past, and those instances are under investigation by the Texas Department of Public Safety. At a preliminary hearing for Ackley at a Pecos federal courthouse on March 31st, Texas DPS Special Agent Adam Patterson testified that the department was able to identify 4 possible juvenile victims through interviews with Ackley. Ackley, when between 30 and 33 years in age, had told a victim in Marfa, who was a minor at the time, to completely undress in front of him, said Patterson. The victim has been identified and interviewed by Patterson, but has not yet provided a victim's statement, he said. Ackley also spoke of another younger victim in Marfa he had contact with while in his early 30s, said Patterson, who noted he had spoken to that victim, but that she said she does not recall the offense. According to a criminal complaint filed upon Ackley's arrest, which was based on a sworn affidavit by Special Agent Patterson, Ackley told DPS he had sexual contact with 2 female children when he was around 20 years old. One victim was 8 years old, and the other was 12 years old. A Texas DPS spokesperson said that the investigation is ongoing and no further details were available as of press time. At the time of his arrest, Ackley was a high school math teacher for Valentine ISD, where he had been employed for 19 years. Prior to that, he had worked at Marfa ISD as a math, science, and computer teacher, and eventually as the school district's technology coordinator. Ackley was detained on March 15th when Special Agent Patterson executed a search warrant at his Valentine home and asked Ackley whether he knew who had used the internet on the property to look at child pornography. Ackley openly admitted that he had, then waived his Miranda rights to continue cooperating with authorities after being taken to the Jeff Davis County Sheriff's Office, according to a criminal complaint. Texas DPS had been acting on a cybercrime tip, notifying the agency that someone with Ackley's IP address was uploading child pornography, including videos depicting female children between the ages of 9 and 12, via a smartphone application called Kick Messenger. The search of Ackley's home uncovered a memory card with three videos of child pornography, one depicting a female child approximately 3 or 4 years old, and the other two depicted female children approximately 11 to 12 years old. Other electronic devices taken from the home are still being investigated, said Patterson, who said devices had been sent to a Homeland Security Investigations Lab in El Paso. Texas DPS is also still combing through files uploaded via Kik, K-I-K, he said. While being questioned by DPS per the criminal complaint, Ackley confessed that in addition to sending and receiving child pornography upwards of 50 times, he had used the application to engage in inappropriate exchanges with underage girls. Patterson noted in his testimony that Ackley admitted to speaking with three children via the app and that those children had not been identified. Authorities also searched the Valentine School, where Ackley worked, on March 15th. Valentine ISD Superintendent and Principal Debbie Engel told the Big Bend Sentinel following the search that nothing criminal had been discovered on school devices and no victims associated with the school had been identified. Engel described the disturbing revelation as a shock to those at the school. "I have ex-students that have called, and they don't believe it," she said. "There has been nobody that has come forward with so much as a whisper." The school obtained Ackley's resignation on March 17th, she said. At the March 31st hearing, Ackley's younger brother also spoke as a witness and was questioned both by Matthew Ellis of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alpine and by Jack Meredith, the public defender assigned to represent Ackley. His questioning focused mostly on the relationship between Albert Ackley and his longtime romantic partner in Valentine, who was in poor health and, by the brother's understanding, dependent upon Ackley as her sole caregiver. Meredith asked the court to consider granting bond while acknowledging that bond in such a case was a rarity so that Ackley could ensure his partner was taken care of. She suffers from kidney failure, requiring dialysis, suffers chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and requires insulin for her diabetes, he said. "She told me if Mr. Ackley does not get out, that she thinks that she'll be dead soon," he said. He noted that all electronic devices had been removed from the home. Ellis argued on behalf of the government that Ackley presented a danger to the community and should not be granted bond. "The government would just like to note that the defendant has admitted to years of engaging in these types of activities, and there has been even an admission from him acting on them with children," said Ellis. "He held a position of trust, a position of responsibility in the community." The government's concern was that Ackley would harm children if released, Ellis continued. "The government does not believe there is an amount of money that can be paid to ensure a child is not harmed in this situation," he said. Judge David B. Fannin acknowledged the unfortunate reality that Ackley's partner, an innocent bystander, was suffering as a result of his detainment, but said that the court could not overlook the danger Ackley posed and ordered him detained without bond. The grand jury indictment was filed on April 14th. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Texas, which is prosecuting the case, declined to comment, citing pending litigation. Public defender Jack Meredith did not return a request for comment by press time. Amidst region-wide EMS turnover, longtime Jeff Davis County EMS Director Vicki Fowler announces retirement. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Far West Texas, Jeff Davis County Emergency Services Director Vicki Fowler, who has been in the role for over 13 years, is set to retire from the volunteer-run service this June, causing the county to seek out a replacement in earnest and even assess the option of partnering with a private company. Jeff Davis County isn't alone in its predicament. Much of the Tri-County area, in which few emergency service providers struggle to meet the needs of residents spread across a vast region, is undergoing a period of turnover when it comes to critical EMS leadership positions. In South Brewster County, Terlingua Fire and EMS Chief Greg Hennington has begun a search for his replacement. County officials representing North Brewster County recently voted to contract private company Emergent Air to fill the void left by the sudden death of Alpine EMS Director and Fire Chief Michael Scudder. Emergent Air is set to take over the 911 service from Terlingua Fire and EMS, who stepped in to prevent a lapse in service in early May and is working to build up its staff, which will include a director. Presidio Emergency Services received a new EMS director this February, Troy Sparks, an EMT who moved up into the role after his predecessor, Melinda Richardson, moved on from the job after 4 years. Richardson declined to comment on her time as EMS director for Presidio EMS. Sparks did not respond to requests for comment. Jeff Davis County EMS is the only remaining service in the Tri-County area operating on a volunteer basis. All other EMS departments operate with paid medics. Fowler's position as EMS director is the only role paid for by the county. While Fowler gets paid to run the administrative side of the EMS service, she does not get paid to go out on 911 calls, which she does in addition to a variety of other essential duties. Running the books, the building, keeping track of all the narcotics, the drugs, what can be had on the ambulance, keeping everything in compliance, making sure your medics are in compliance with their certifications, and scheduling everyone to make sure the shifts are all covered, said Jeff Davis County Judge Curtis Evans of the job description. In addition to competing with Terlingua Fire and EMS and Emergent Air for a new EMS director, whoever fills Fowler's role will need to run the volunteer service while bringing the department into the next phase of operating with paid EMTs. Volunteer services are dying because people are aging out. And that's certainly true for our service, said Fowler. The only way volunteer services, especially in the rural areas, are going to get to survive is by becoming hybrid and eventually transitioning to fully paid service. As local EMS directors like Fowler move on from their physically and emotionally demanding roles, counties and municipalities are tasked with coming up with quick, viable solutions to ensure there are no gaps in ambulance service. But retiring old-timers are difficult to replace, and there is not an abundance of young people ready to step in, said Fowler. Attracting candidates to remote areas like Fort Davis poses special challenges, she said. It's hard to attract young families here. We really don't have much industry except for the school, the observatory, or the state park. When kids graduate, if they want to make a living, they really need to leave the area, said Fowler. At the March 31st Big Bend Regional Hospital District meeting, Hennington spoke to the problem succinctly. It's all of us old people, so to speak, and not a lot of backfill on that. In light of the region-wide issue, there have been recent ongoing discussions amongst county and city officials as well as Big Bend Regional Hospital District, which serves Presidio and Brewster counties, regarding the long-term need to establish a regional EMS solution in order to centralize operations. At the recent hospital district meeting, Hennington advised the board to prepare to revisit a discussion about that concept, noting there would be some logic to joining forces and that it could be a pretty good operation. But the reality of orchestrating an emergency response operation on such a scale is no easy feat and would hardly come together overnight. The regional EMS concept may still be on the table down the road, but that will take a tremendous amount of work, said Hennington in an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel. With a potential streamlined regional solution years down the road, Jeff Davis County is facing the immediate problem of replacing Fowler as she exits the role of EMS director this summer. The hope is to find a replacement that can serve the community as well as Fowler has, said Judge Curtis Evans. We're used to a certain type of service from what Vicki has created. It's a personable service, and they know the people in the community and they take care of them, said Evans. But while the preference may be to hire a local director, the county hasn't ruled out the option of going with a private company. This is largely a matter of practicality, noted Fowler, as there are limited locally based options. Jeff Davis County Ambulance Service is in continued preliminary talks with Emergent Air, the company soon to be servicing North Brewster County, but is still accepting applications for the EMS director position and has fielded some promising candidates. We don't want to hand off to a company just because these are our people, our community. We want to be the ones taking care of them, said Fowler. But realistically, we don't have the staffing and management experience. Hennington originally retired from his position as chief of Terlingua Fire and EMS a couple of years ago, but resumed the role this past May after his successor didn't quite work out. He said they are beginning the search for someone to take his place as he seeks to move on to his next phase of life, potentially serving as Brewster County judge, a race in which voters will soon elect the Republican and Democratic candidates in a runoff election in May. Hennington will focus on finding an individual with past EMS management experience to replace him, he said, and is not currently considering partnering with a private company in any capacity. The ultimate goal would be for Hennington to train his replacement for 6 months to a year, he said, in order to have adequate time to cover the job's varied responsibilities. It's everything from working with the politicians to talking to the press to knowing the community, knowing all of the 3,000 square miles of land down here, said Hennington. Working with the Park Service, Border Patrol, there's a lot of nuances that just take time to learn. Fowler said she wanted to retire in order to make room for new leadership, which could better serve Jeff Davis County EMS moving forward. But her reasons for stepping down are also personal. Being over the age of 60, she said she didn't want to work up until the end of her life. Sharon Faulkner, who previously served as Jeff Davis County's EMS director before Fowler took over, died in 2010 in a plane crash en route to the Midland International Airport with a patient. Michael Scudder of Alpine EMS died of a cardiac emergency while responding to a 911 call this past December at age 61. I didn't want to be on the ambulance when I was 55. I figured, that's too long. I'm too old at that point. I should be doing other things and let the younger people treat the patients. And then I turned 60 in December, and I'm still treating patients on the ambulance, said Fowler. The job has also become increasingly demanding, with the volume of 911 calls coming into the service steadily rising each year. This year, that volume spiked 21% from the year before, said Fowler. And before that, the volume has increased at least 10% year to year. On average, the service receives around 25 emergency calls a month. Hennington, too, reported Terlingua Fire and EMS call volumes were increasing at a rate of 8 to 10% each year. Because the region is so vast and locations of callers can be remote, response times can range anywhere from 30 minutes to 2.5 hours, said Fowler. The service also provides mutual aid to Marfa and Presidio EMS. Fowler said she gave 6 months' notice that she'd be moving on from Jeff Davis County Ambulance Service, also referred to as the Mountain Medics, in order to spend more time with her grandchildren and on her hobbies of quilting and gardening. This coming November will mark her 34th year in EMS. She moved to Fort Davis from Cloudcroft, New Mexico in 1997 when her husband got a job at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. Before becoming director, she served as a volunteer for the service for years. Fowler will be leaving the department in good standing with a solid crew of dedicated volunteer paramedics and EMTs, she said. Most of the Mountain Medics have full-time jobs, said Fowler. Their team includes a veterinarian, pastor, and business owner. The majority of their volunteers have been involved for 10-plus years, she said, and the median age of the volunteers is upper 50s, with a couple in their mid-70s still serving on the EMS force. Ambulance drivers are often spouses of on-call medics. Jeff Davis County provides some funding for the service. It pays Fowler's salary and contributes accounting services, as well as funding for the facility and utilities. Money Jeff Davis County EMS receives comes in part from a half-cent sales tax, plus money the service brings in by billing insurance companies and Medicare. One of the benefits of being a volunteer service is that Jeff Davis County Ambulance Service more readily qualifies for grants, said Fowler. Their service has been funded for the past 10 years by both the FMH and Yarborough Foundations, both based out of Midland. Those are the main two that we have worked with over the last couple of years, and they've been instrumental in helping to fund our state-of-the-art ambulances, said Fowler. In addition to funding for ambulances, training equipment, and a riser lift that helps medics with lift assistance, FMH also awarded Jeff Davis County Ambulance Service a grant to commission architectural renderings for a potential bunkhouse for the facility. Fowler said the designs for the structure, complete with simple bedrooms, bathroom, and kitchen, have recently been finalized, and they intend to apply for additional funding to get the bunkhouse constructed in the next grant cycle this summer. The new build will likely cost around $300,000. Even though some of my former medics who come back and help us out are happy sleeping on a cot upstairs in a classroom, new guys we're going to be hiring are not going to be happy doing that, said Fowler. We realized that what we really needed in order to be able to attract people would be a place for them to sleep and hang out, so we decided to go with a bunkhouse. Fowler wears a gold necklace with a Star of Life charm, the EMS symbol, and a radio which monitors local police and fire traffic strapped to her hip. She said she never imagined she'd become so involved with EMS, but she fell into it and over time realized it was what she was meant to do. I never looked at it like, oh, I get to save lives, said Fowler. But making a difference in somebody else's life, to me, that's what it's all about, said Fowler. just being there for somebody else when they're having the worst day of their life. For older medics, decades of being on call and moving patients takes a toll on the body, and continued exposure to emergency medical events can cause mental health issues such as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, said Fowler. It gets very difficult on the psyche. It's hard to sleep at night, said Fowler. EMTs can also be easy targets, said Fowler, and are subject to being assaulted by their patients. The role requires a lot of resilience, said Fowler. Now, with the pandemic, there's a lot more mental illness. People are just a lot angrier, and they're a lot more willing to just take it out on the first person they see. It's not their typical personality. It's just their way of coping with what's happened to them, said Fowler. Mountain medics try to treat their patients at home whenever possible, Fowler said, to prevent burdening them with the financial cost of an ambulance ride. A trip to the hospital also takes around 3 hours round trip, taking medics out of commission to help with any other calls that might come in during that time. The majority of the 911 calls Jeff Davis County Ambulance receives are medical, as opposed to reports of major trauma, like a car accident or shooting. Serving the elderly and low-income populations often requires performing patient education, said Fowler. We become primary medical care for a lot of people because they can't afford a doctor, or they don't have a way to get to a doctor, or they just don't know they need to be going, said Fowler. Because Medicare does not pay for a 911 call unless it results in a patient being transported to a hospital, Jeff Davis County Ambulance does not charge patients for treat and release visits. While the job is mostly thankless, said Fowler, there are occasions where a small act of kindness from a community member, like a freshly brewed cup of coffee for their EMTs upon arrival at a 2 a.m. emergency call, goes a long way. The Texas Department of Safety awarded Jeff Davis County Ambulance Service a Regional Commander's Award in 2014 for their work performing a 30-hour rescue of a hiker in Hell's Canyon in the Davis Mountains, where the crew cared for and stayed overnight with the patient because a helicopter ran out of fuel. Fowler and a team recovered the distressed individual from down in the canyon just before heavy rainfall flooded the area. Another standout memory was that of an emergency call involving a young girl, around 7 or 8 years old, that suffered a seizure while in a church service. Fowler hadn't realized what an impact she'd made on the child, who recovered without needing to be taken to the hospital, until her mother dropped off a framed drawing the girl had made for Fowler, describing her experience, saying she made her feel safe and secure. That is among my prized possessions from this business, said Fowler.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 14th. Commissioners approve land for new jail site. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Land for a new jail was on the agenda for discussion at the Ward County Commissioners meeting on Monday morning. MEDC had offered to deed a piece of land to the county for the construction of a new jail. Three separate parcels were submitted for consideration. Quote, "We looked at all three locations, discussed it as a court, consulted with the sheriff, and chose one of the locations out on Parkway almost to Sealy," County Judge Greg Holly said. The chosen parcel of land is a 12-acre tract west of Parkway that had been staked off and surveyed. MEDC has executed a deed transferring that property to Ward County. Quote, "We intend to discuss it again at budget this summer and start the bidding project with an architect," Judge Holly said. The exact cost is not known at this time, but it is believed enough funds are set aside for the project to proceed later this year. The cost of other jails in the area that are similar in size, design, and construction have been looked at and used as a guideline for cost. No action is taken during a budget meeting, but a full discussion of the project will take place. Architect bidding could possibly be started in early 2023. A motion to accept the deed from MEDC for building a new jail was made and seconded. Voting for the motion was County Judge Greg Holly, Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms abstained due to his being a member of the MEDC Board of Directors at this time. The reappointment of four Ward County Hospital Board of Management members was also on the agenda at Monday's meeting. The four members up for reappointment to another two-year term are Dr. John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, Gerald Carlson, and Angel Fuentes. Holly said he would contact the four men to ascertain their willingness to continue on the board, and final action will be taken at the next meeting. Quote, "The court is free to reappoint the four whose terms are ending, or appoint new members, or even appoint additional members, up to 11 or 12, according to law," Judge Holly said. No action on the hospital board appointments needed to be taken at this time. An employee change was approved for Susie Mendoza, Crime Victim Service Coordinator, effective April 9, 2022, $1,500 bi-weekly, full benefits. Colgate County Road request for County Road 140 in Ward County was approved for placement of three 4.9-inch poly pipelines and one 3.5-inch FBE steel line pipelines and a 24-inch casing to be bored under County Road 140. Brass's Sandhill Loop request was also approved. The request was for permission to board under County Road 140 to place a 16-inch steel natural gas liquid pipeline. The court approved the request for required continuing education for Ward County Treasurer Carly Ennis, who must complete 20 hours of continuing education annually. A motion was made and seconded for the approval of bill payments for the county totaling $1.8 million. The next meeting of the commissioners will be held on April 25th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Remote scribes being considered for doctor's use. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A pending agreement with Voice Products was discussed by the Board of Managers of Ward Memorial Hospital at the Thursday night regularly scheduled meeting. Voice Products supplies remote medical scribes to doctors to help cut the load of paperwork for the physician. The remote medical scribe's function is to record and transcribe a patient's visit with the doctor, saving the doctor the time involved in writing up the individual patient's visit for the medical file. Quote, "The scribe can be located anywhere in the world. Voice Products remote scribes are actually physicians, mostly located in the Caribbean," Ward Memorial Hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez said. A trial test of the program has proved to be successful and beneficial. The doctor takes his or her phone into the examination room. The remote scribe is connected and listens to the patient's visit, takes the proper medical notes, transcribes, and sends the transcription to the physician. Dr. Thong has tested the program and said it does work. It saves invaluable time from the deluge of paperwork involved with each patient, Rodriguez said. The present board members, Frank Heslin, Lisa Stewart, Gerald Carlson, Dr. John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, approved the motion to table this decision until the agreement with Voice Products is sent and approved. Board members not present to vote on the motion were Jeff Burdick, Angel Fuentes, and Tommy Escamilla. Other business for the night was the approval of staff changes. In other business on the agenda, A report on hospital operations was discussed by Rodriguez. An open house is in the future for the public to view new equipment in the cardiac pulmonary rehab units. PT staff are undergoing training for the use of the new equipment, so when the open house and ribbon cutting is held in May, the public can be well informed. Another discussion under the hospital operations section of the agenda was the report on the procedures for employees to follow a chain of command to deal with employment issues. The hospital operations report was accepted and seconded. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held at 6:15 p.m. on April 21st in the Physical Therapy Building at 420 South Ike Street. Swanson revokes Valencia's probation, orders him to prison. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man, who was sentenced to 6 years probation for a third drunk driving offense with two of his children in tow and driving on the right side of the road, has now been ordered to serve a 10-year prison sentence. 36-year-old Francisco Ayala Valencia of 2605 South Gale Street pleaded guilty to the crime on October 12, 2021 in the 143rd Judicial District Court and was sentenced to 10 years confinement in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, probated for 6 years. Under a probated sentence, the defendant will be sentenced to a set amount of jail or prison time, which will be suspended. The defendant must report to a probation officer for a set amount of time, pay fines and court costs, and comply with all the conditions of probation. Since that time, Valencia violated the terms of his probated sentence when he broke into a home in the 3700 block of South Fay Street and lay in wait for the new boyfriend of his former girlfriend to arrive home in an attempt to assault him. At the time, Ward County Sheriff Furman Valle said, quote, October 30, 2021, Valencia broke into the victim's home and waited for him to arrive home. Once the victim was in the house, he attacked him with a long rod with two sharp points. The victim, who was not named, was able to use defensive measures and throw Valencia out of the house. Valencia fled the scene on foot, but was located a short distance from the scene and subsequently arrested and charged with burglary of a habitation to commit assault, a first-degree felony. He has been held at the Ward County Jail since that time. Valencia also failed to pay the fines and fees of $2,800 assessed and is delinquent $120 or perform the required 20 community service hours a month. On April 5th, Valencia appeared in front of 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson, where he was ordered to serve a 10-year prison sentence in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. The charge in which Valencia will serve prison time occurred on September 26, 2020, when Valencia was observed by Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes driving a vehicle westbound on the South Service Road and crossed over into the eastbound lane. Lieutenant Kynes had to take evasive action to avoid getting struck by Valencia's vehicle. Valencia was intoxicated and was traveling with two juvenile passengers, ages 10 and 4. Valencia's previous convictions were in January 2014 and August 2015, both in Ward County. Valencia was further ordered to pay $508 in court costs. He was also given credit for 282 days time served. 143rd District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds served as attorney for the state on the case. Local sales tax distribution continues to increase. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. For the fourth consecutive month, sales receipts distribution for Monahans are up over the same periods of 2021. Monahans received $347,000 for the April distribution compared to $254,000 in April 2021, an increase of 36%. Year to date, the city has received $1.3 million compared to $1.1 million for the first 4 months of the year, an increase of 19%. Monahan City Manager Rex C. is pleased with the report and hopes that the trend will continue. Quote, with the April 2022 sales tax allocation, the city of Monahans is $217,000 or 19% above the same time last year. This allocation is up $93,000 from April 2021 and up $8,400 from last month's allocation. This is good news, and we certainly hope the upward trend continues, Thies said. Pyote is the only community in the county that dropped, but all other communities in the county also received more money than last April and for the year to date. Pyote receipts, both for the month and the year, dropped. For April, Pyote received $12,000 compared to $19,000 last year, down by 35%, and is down by 11% for the year, with the total of $49,000 compared to $55,000. Grand Falls received $10,000 in April compared to $3,900 last year, an increase of 160%. For the year, Grand Falls' total receipts were $41,000, 163% over 2021. Thorntonville received $10,000, up by 183% over last April's receipts of $3,600. For the year, Thorntonville is up by 75% from $17,000 to $30,000. Wickett was flatter both for the month and the year, but still moving in a positive direction. Wickett received $24,000, up by 7% over last April's total of $2,600. For the year, the community is up by 31% with $103,000 compared to $78,000 last year. In Reeves County, Pecos received $567,000, up by 67% for April compared to $338,000, but that total is down from the March total of $640,000. For the year, Pecos is up by 26% to $2.3 million compared to $1.8 million. Balmoray increased by 1.5% to $5,900 compared to $5,800 in April 2021. For the year, Balmoray received $27,000, up by 5.8%. After no receipts for March, Toya received $6,200, leaving the community up by 30% for the year, with a total of $10,600 compared to $8,100. In Pecos County, Fort Stockton gained 8% to $312,000 for April, compared to $288,000. For the year, the town is down by 10% with $1.2 million compared to $1.3 million. Ira Ann dropped slightly for April, $26,400, down by 1.7%. For the year, Ira Ann has received $114,000 compared to $134,000, a drop of 14%. In Winkler County, the county is rebounding strongly with an April increase of 77% to $279,000 compared to $157,000 last year. Year to date, the county is up by 62% to $1 million compared to $629,000. Kermit is up by 15% with a total of $127,000, and up for the year by 41% with a total of $587,000. Wink dropped for the month with $33,000 compared to $56,000, a drop of 41%. But for the year, the community is down by 7% with a total of $119,000 compared to $128,000. Andrews gained 41% for the month to $641,000, compared to $454,000. For the year, Andrews is up by 21%, with a total of $2.5 million, compared to $2.0 million last year, a gain of 21%. Crane remains down for the year by 13%, with receipts of $283,000, compared to $327,000. But for the month, Crane gained 12.8%, with April receipts of $64,000, compared to $57,000 in 2021. The City of Midland is up to $5 million, up by 47%. For the year, Midland is up by 32%, with a total of $22.7 million. Midland County doubled for the month and 71% for the year. For the month, the county received $4.6 million, a gain of 101%, and for the year, receipt totals are up $19 million, up by 41%. Odessa received $4.4 million for April, up by 33.9%, and $19 million for the year, up by 17%. Monahans, Andrews, Fort Stockton, and Ira Ann all assess a sales tax rate of 2%. Pecos, Crane, Balmoray, and Toya assess 1.5%. The City of Midland assesses 1.25%, and tax rate for Kermit and Wink is 1.0%. County rates for Midland and Winkler counties are 0.5%. Statewide, Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager sent cities, counties, transit systems, and special purpose taxing districts $866 million in local sales tax allocations for April, 27.9% more than in April 2021. These allocations are based on sales made in February by businesses that report tax monthly.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.